Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Good evening. I'm Ashi Lipsker, and this is 101.9 Chai FM. And wow, wow, wow. We meet this evening just before the festival of Shavuot. It's the culmination of almost 7 weeks of counting. And I say almost, but it actually is 7 weeks. Tonight, we finish the counting of the Omer. We've gone through the weeks of chesed, loving kindness, and gvura, discipline, boundaries. We've done tiferet, which is truth, and it's compassion, and it's forgiveness, and it's balance. We've done netzach, a whole week of fortitude. Another week of hod, splendor, humility, gratitude. And we did the week of Yesod, bonding. And the week we're about to finish is the week of sovereignty, malchut, the week of leadership. This week, which takes the other six and funnels them into dignity, sovereignty, malchut. It wasn't automatic. There was lots to be done, but we needed to do it. We need to be prepared for tomorrow night. We need to be prepared for Friday morning. What's going to happen? We are going to be in shul. The Rebbe said, from the infants to the aged, anyone who can come to shul, be brought to shul, needs to be there as every Jew stood at Sinai. We will gather to hear the 10 Aseret HaDibrot. It is translated into English as commandments. But if you look at the Hebrew words, 10 things God said. And yes, they were instructions. And yes, there was so much in each one that our sages have worked out that every single one of the 613 mitzvot, they are incorporated in these Aseret HaDibrot. We're going to get the gift, re-get the gift, recommit to the gift that several million people and many souls yet to be born stood at Sinai and received. And it's our privilege. It wasn't just something in the past. It's happening. Be there. And what are we going to get? Something called the Torah. What's in the Torah? In the Torah, in the first book, it tells us who we are. It's our genealogy. It's where we come from Adam, through Noah, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. And Jacob had 12 sons. And then there was the line of Levi, Kohos, Amram, father of Moshe. It's our story, our illustrious parents. But it's not just joining a book club. It tells us not only where we come from and who we are and what our DNA carries, but it tells us about our responsibility. Because the Torah begins with creation. And it wasn't until 2,500 years later that there was revelation at Sinai. But you know what? The Torah is the blueprint for creation. The Torah preceded creation. It's an amazing, amazing concept. It's an incredible yontif. And it's our story. It's our responsibility, and it's our future. Nothing simple here. It tells us that the world is waiting for us. The Omer has finished because we have been preparing for this momentous occasion. It's so beautiful. It's so meaningful. It tells us who we are, why we're here, and what the future will hold. What's going to happen is that we'll have Yontif tomorrow night. We will light candles. Lahadlik ner shel Yom Tov and Shehechianu. And it's early. I think it's about 5:08 or 5:06. And we will welcome in Shavuot. Shavuot is not just about cheesecake. And we need to know that we prepared and are preparing spiritually so that everything we've done till now will fill us with a tremendous sense of focus and purpose that we can carry into the year. Hashem's going to give us a gift. This festival has four names, but one is called Zman, the time, Matan Toratenu, of the giving of our Torah, the season of the giving of our law. It happened on the sixth day, and it was Shabbos, and it was the year 2448 after creation, and he gave us the Torah on Mount Sinai. It's called Chag HaShavuot, the Feast of Weeks. And we celebrate Shavuot on the 6th and 7th of Sivan to commemorate that great event. Of course, 7 weeks, because it is celebrated after the end of the 7 weeks of the Omer, which we began on the second night of Pesach. There are two other names, Chag HaKatzir, the Feast of Harvest. In the land of Israel, this was the season when almost everybody was a farmer. Years and years ago, except for the Kohanim and the Leviim, this was the season of the harvest, especially the wheat harvest. And it was a time when the first offering of the new harvest was offered in the form of 2 loaves of wheat bread. Normally, we didn't bring chametz to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Holy Temple. It was always matzah. But once a year, Chag HaShavuot, 2 loaves of wheat bread. But there's another name, Yom HaBikurim, the day of the first fruit offering. Because Shavuot marked the beginning of the season of the offering of the first fruits, when we had a Beit HaMikdash, a holy temple, in Yerushalayim. And there you go. The offering of the 2 loaves, which were called the first fruit of the wheat harvest, and so colorful, so rich, so meaningful, and there is so much attached to each one of these names. It is also the time of the betrothal of Hashem and the Jewish people. It's a time of commitment. Picture to yourself, how do you feel before a wedding? You have been preparing. We kind of mentioned it last week. Picture the wedding celebration with the caterer and the florist and the musicians and the hall. Picture the wine, picture the guests, picture the beautiful clothing. There's a chuppah, there are chairs, there's a bride. There's a chuppah, there's a groom. Of course, just before the wedding, how do you feel? After all these weeks, hopefully it was only weeks. Got to say here that somehow in today's times, people think that it takes years to get to know each other and no rush, and unfortunately, very often, no commitment. And we need to know that from the time the Jews left Egypt, it was 7 weeks, and then it was the wedding. We need to take a lesson from that. Our rabbis encourage and instruct. You know, in a sense, you meet, but you don't meet just anybody. Think of a shidduch. What happens in the shidduch world? Somebody knows somebody, and somebody knows somebody, and they think they'll work together. Why? probably because all the basics match. So in a sense, in the shidduch world, in the proper shidduch world, the bride and groom-to-be have met in ideals long before. There's been so much research, objective research. It's not like you have to find out on your own and, God forbid, bump into walls. People know the family. People know the friends. And in today's times, there's something that has happened for quite a few years. A young woman, a young man, write out a profile, a resume, which basically will include who they are, when they were born, where they were educated, where they went to camp, to school, who their friends are, what their hobbies are, what their dreams, hopes, and goals are. And they even will probably write how tall they are. They really want to blaze a trail, to move away all the questions. And when the couple meets, there's two things that they need to know. Number one, am I comfortable with this person? And number two, do I respect, do I look up to this person? Can I feel proud to walk down the street and say, this is my husband, this is my wife, this is the mother of my child? It has to match ahead of time. And you meet someone that potentially could be perfect. On paper, they're perfect. But then you meet to see, am I comfortable with this person? Is this somebody in whose company I feel good? And secondly, do I look up to this person? Can I admire them? But now it's before the wedding. And of course, with all the preparations, you could feel a bit overwhelmed, which is why I mentioned cheesecake before, that we need to know that that's not the main thing of this festival. The details, the lists, of course. But there needs to be time to focus on the essence, the gratitude, the joy. Ashreinu, we are so blessed, Shehechiyanu v'kiyamanu, that he has allowed us to reach this season. He's kept us alive. Wow, Hashem, you knew ahead of time what would be. Why did I worry? Wow, Hashem, so grateful. This match is perfect. And we know that we and Hashem are a perfect match. The spiritual preparation has been for a real eternal relationship. We need to feel serious, grateful, privileged, excited, hopeful, and committed. But we need to feel happy. In fact, every mitzvah must be done. Ivdu et Hashem b'simcha, serve God with happiness. But let's make it practical. How are we going to do this? Let's draw inspiration from the Jewish people who, this past Sunday, many years ago, arrived at Sinai. And they arrived there, and there was great, great joy, because they'd been traveling for 6 weeks, guided by the pillar of cloud and then the pillar of fire. And every time that it began to hover above them instead of leading them, they knew it was time to camp. So they stopped, they'd received the signal, they pitched camp, they'd reached Mount Sinai, and it happened on the 1st of Sivan. They were going to get the Torah on the 6th. And they encamped around the mountain, which was going to mean a whole lot to them, this mountain, Mount Sinai. And of course, they got busy setting up their tents, and everybody was busy. They were making a home for themselves, and they were going to stay there for almost a year. But I very much want to share something that happened ahead of time. Because as the day grew near, that Hashem was going to give the Torah to his chosen people, and it was ultimately the children of Israel who had descended into Egypt and become refined in that place. But Hashem thought it was only fair to offer the Torah to every other nation on earth. Of course, he knew they would reject it. But before he offered the Torah to the children of Israel, he went to each of the main nations that existed at that time. And it's a beautiful story, and it goes like this. He first approached the people of Edom. Those are the descendants of Esau, Jacob's brother. He offered them the Torah and he invited them. He said, "You Edomites, sons of Esau, I bring you a gift, my gift of the Holy Torah. Accept it and you'll be blessed with long life, you and your children." And so they began to question. They said, "Okay, what's written in your Torah?" And Hashem said, "It is written in my Torah, thou shalt not murder." They protested. "That's ridiculous," they said. "We are soldiers. We are men of war. We live by the sword. How do you expect us to accept a Torah which preaches against our very way of life? No, thank you. Your Torah is of no use to us." Wow. Can you imagine something like that? But of course. And so he then went and he offered it to the children of Yishmael. And the children of Yishmael, brother of Yitzchak, would seem to be the next reasonable choice. And he said, "Children of Yishmael, accept the Torah which I bring you this day. And if you keep its commandments, you will be blessed with all that is good." And they also were like, "What does your Torah demand of us?" And he said, "My Torah says, thou shalt not steal." "Uh-uh," replied the sons of Yishmael, "that wouldn't suit us at all. We are business people, men of commerce. Such a law would interfere with our business transactions. We're sorry. We have no use for your Torah." So who else could he go to? He went to the people of Tyre and Sidon and all the people of Canaan. And he said to them, "I bring you a most precious gift, my Torah. Take it, and you'll be blessed with many good days upon your land." So the Canaanites said, "First, tell us what is written in your Torah." And Hashem said, "In my Torah it is written, thou shalt have fair scales, correct weights, and give full measure." So the Canaanites said, "We don't want to accept your Torah, which is so finicky about such matters. Your Torah is not for us." And they were quite emphatic. And so when Hashem had taken the Torah to all the other nations, and they didn't understand its worth, they couldn't estimate how valuable it was, he went to the children of Israel, and he was confident that his chosen people would appreciate the Torah and would accept it eagerly. And they did. Not that they knew what was inside. They never asked what's written in it. They thought, "Hashem, if you want to give something, creator of heaven and earth, God who was so kind, created the world with compassion, is always forgiving, Hashem who took us out of Egypt, we want it. If you are giving it, you are the top." You know, like when you know that a top designer of jewelry, a top designer of clothing, a top designer of furniture, you can trust. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be lasting. It's going to be just for you. However, Hashem wasn't just going to give the Torah. So the Jews had arrived and were busy at Sinai in the days leading up to the giving of the Torah. And they were going to be there Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and get the Torah on Shabbos. Although there is a dispute, was it on the 6th, was it on the 7th? But we did get it on Shabbos. And the preparation, the final preparation, were the 3 days before. Gimel, Dalet, He. Today we are in Dalet, the 4th day. Tomorrow is Erev Yontif, the 5th day of the month of Sivan. And as mentioned last week, when they got to Sinai on the 1st, Hashem let them rest. But the next day, Moshe himself went up on the mountain. And then Hashem said to him, gather the people, but first speak to the women, so they will hear and appreciate my teachings. And when their words have entered, my words have entered their heart, they're going to help their husbands to educate, to train the children in my Torah's way. And when you finish, Moshe, when you finish speaking to the women, turn to the men and teach them what I've told you. But don't leave anything out. Don't omit anything. And sure enough, Moshe went up on the mountain. He came down the mountain. He spoke to the people exactly as Hashem had commanded him to do. Moshe was the humblest person who had ever lived in this world. And when Moshe had finished speaking to them, something wonderful happened. They all called out together, Naaseh, all that Hashem has told us, we will gladly do. And then Hashem asked them for a guarantee. He said, what guarantee can you offer that you will keep your word? He wasn't going to give the Torah without that kind of commitment. So the people said, our holy patriarchs, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, they will be our surety, our guarantee. And Hashem said, no. And he gave interesting reasons for each. He says, you have to give me other guarantors. Because Avraham questioned my words, saying, how will I know that I will inherit the land of Canaan? And Yitzchak, Isaac, loved Esau, who actually hated me. And when Jacob was in trouble, he said, my path is hidden from the Lord. Oh no, you have to give me a still better guarantee than they could ever be. They thought for a while and they said, will you accept our children who will be born to us as guarantors? And that would assure that we intend to keep your Torah. Wow, said Hashem, your children will indeed be the best guarantee that you can offer. I gladly accept them as your pledge that I can trust you. We faithfully promise to study the Torah and teach the Torah to our children so they can teach it to their children and so on for always. And Hashem said, your words pleased me very much. And now I shall look for your deeds. But what does this tell us? That as we go into Shavuot, it's not really about cheesecake. It's about education. It's about inspiring the children. It's about inspiring ourselves. Because from the beginning of creation, through Revelation, and onwards into the wonderful times in the Promised Land with the two holy temples, we are nearing the realization of the purpose of creation, and that is the revelation of godliness in this world with the coming of Mashiach. How can these things serve as inspiration for us in a practical way? So I'm going to mention that there are people who are directly connected with this day. Number one, there's Moshe, our teacher. Moshe who brought the Torah down. Moshe who's considered the 7th generation. Moshe Rabbeinu and Shavuot are very, very synonymous. But there's also King David, David HaMelech. David HaMelech was born and passed away on Shavuot. And David, the sweet singer of Israel, who composed the Tehillim, who is the progenitor, the forebear of Moshiach himself. David, whose Tehillim we say in our prayers, whose Tehillim we say, for all he yearned for was to be close to Hashem. And through his words of Tehillim, he gave us words that are really our own, because Tehillim was prophetically inspired. The Torah Moshe brought down was dictated by Hashem. Hashem himself taught Moshe the Torah in his 40 days on the mountain, and he also dictated it, and Moshe put ink to parchment. As we said, it's also in the Ten Commandments, which were the Luchot, which were the stones, the stone tablets into which were engraved the Ten Commandments. There's another hero, another inspiration besides our teacher Moshe, who teaches us the Torah. There's also King David and his sweet songs of Tehillim. There's also Ruth. Why Ruth? Number one, she's a great-grandmother of King David. Number two, we read the book of Ruth on Shavuot because hers is a story of selfless conversion. And all of us were converts at Sinai. All of us accepted the mitzvahs as a convert accepts. All of us need to learn from Ruth with her selfless dedication, even though she was a princess. And there were times when she had to live in embarrassing poverty. But besides Moshe, our teacher, and David, the sweet singer of Israel, our king, the progenitor of Mashiach, and Ruth, who talks to our heart about simple dedication to Hashem, it is also the yahrzeit of Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, lover of Israel. Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, who brought to this world the holy teachings of Kabbalah, who re-inspired a nation after difficult, difficult times. And with his teachings, we will approach Mashiach. The Baal Shem Tov was in Shamayim in heaven during his lifetime, not once, but in one of his elevations, and it was Rosh Hashanah, in the year 1747, he met the Mashiach. He went into the chamber of Mashiach, where all the holy patriarchs and leaders and teachers were studying and sharing words of Torah in heaven. And he approached Mashiach, and he said, "When will the Master come?" And Mashiach said, "When your wellsprings will spread to the furthest corners, to the furthest people. When your wellsprings will spread chutza to the outside." And it is through the Baal Shem Tov and his teachings that we will shortly greet, welcome Mashiach. These are shepherds. We've had shepherds, faithful shepherds, loyal teachers. Let's look at Moshe. He was like a mother. He was called Raya Mehemna, the shepherd who was faithful. But it's also explained by the Rebbe that he was Raya Mehemne, the shepherd of faith. He nurtured their faith. He was loyal. He didn't give up. He was gentle. He was caring. It's an incredible thing. We've had so much. So do we have it today? We're told an incredible thing. We're told that true leaders never leave their flock. They will not desert the sheep of their flock. Avraham Avinu is still praying for us, as is Yitzchak and Yaakov and Moshe Rabbeinu. The question is asked, where's Moshe? And the answer is, just as down here he served, he stood and gave and nurtured, af lehalon, Oimeidu Mishamesh, so does he continue to do in heaven. Leaders never leave their flock. They're all still here. We have to stretch a bit to get that concept into our minds and into our lives. But I'm going to tell you something amazing. When the Rebbe came out with the campaign to study Rambam, Maimonides, the laws, and divided it up that we should study three chapters a day so we could finish it in a year, or one chapter a day and finish it in 3 years, or, if not possible, to at least study Sefer HaMitzvahs, which is a list, the way the Rambam lists the 613 mitzvahs. And we study those mitzvahs. Children study the mitzvahs, even women who don't have a lot of time. And it goes according to the three chapters. What are the mitzvahs incorporated in the three chapters that are studied daily? And the Rebbe said, what does it do if a child just says these mitzvahs? He learns these mitzvahs and he repeats them. The Rebbe said, when his lips move, the lips of the Rambam are moving in the grave. And he's a big tzaddik, and the air around him changes. And I think we can understand it by the concept in quantum physics of a butterfly flapping its wings in one end of the world and causing change, causing a tsunami at the other end of the world. Our tzaddikim, Moshe and the Torah, when we study Torah, even a child, these tzaddikim study along and they change the air, they change the atmosphere. What happens when we study Torah? We purify ourselves, we connect to Hashem, we purify the atmosphere, and we get the help of Hashem himself and these great tzaddikim. What about when we say Tehillim? I imagine that King David is saying the Tehillim along with us, changing the air. We change it a little bit. These tzaddikim change it a lot. And what is the change? It's change in the world to prepare it, that Mashiach should come, and God himself will be revealed and dwell with all of us, amongst us. There'll be no more war, no more famine, no more jealousy, no more hatred. Everything will be. Everyone will want to just want to know more about Hashem. That will be the entire goal, to know him more. And you can never know infinity. So it's a joyous journey of light and delight, which will be greater and greater and greater. Our leaders are still with us. Our loving teachers, Moshe Rabbeinu, David HaMelech, Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, these are their special days, and we need to connect with them because they are there for us, and it's very beautiful, and it's very available. There is a teaching that when an event happens, every year it rehappens. Think of your birthday. The energy that was present then is revisited again. We need to draw on that energy and bring it into our lives. It's an amazing thing. The Jewish people committed. We recommit. What are we recommitting to? We're recommitting to studying the Torah. You know, it's such a word that people don't really understand. It's our precious yichus, our precious genealogy. It speaks about humankind. It speaks about the Jewish nation. It speaks about values, morals, laws. It speaks about the road to a good life, not just temporary, not just I had a few good innings, but now oy vey. No. And it's true that Hashem gave it to us. And when we connect with him, we are always, always guaranteed of success. We need to study this Torah. We need to study it and go deeper and deeper into it because it's our story. It tells us about ourselves. And it resonates with our soul. And it fills us with happiness. And we committed to educating our children. That was the guarantee. And we need to recommit to to constantly raise the bar. We live in a secular society. What's important? Gymnastics and sports and studying secular subjects because we have to have a career and we have to get ahead in life. There's a beautiful story told about Rabbi Chodakov, who was the special personal secretary of the Rebbe. He was secretary to the previous Rebbe as well, a giant in education, a wonderful orator. And Rabbi Chodakov once spoke, and he spoke as follows. He said, people are always trying to get ahead in life. So they send their children to the best nursery school they think, something that will nurture the child to get ahead in life. And they send them to the best school and then the best high school. And then people go to the best university. Why? To get ahead in life. And eventually, they've got three cars in the garage and then a summer home and a regular home and trips overseas, because to them, that's getting ahead in life. But if you ask them, what is life? What is life? Life, we know, has to be permanent. They can't really answer that question, because everything they're pushing for has a sell-by date. Everything they think is fabulous is going to expire. Everything is that's really important, they don't have a handle on it. But that's what Shavuot is all about. It's a time of accepting the infinite Torah, our precious princess, our precious gift from Hashem, committing to it, teaching our children that. And look at the Shema. What do we say to ourselves at least twice a day when we say Shema Yisrael? We say, listen, O Israel. I'm talking to my own soul. Absorb, understand, Israel. Hashem Elokeinu, transcendent God, is our immanent God, and Elohim also connotes power. We can access that infinite power. Transcendent God, Hashem Echad, is one. Everything in your life can be a unified effort. There's nothing that you do, say, think that is outside of the theme. And it brings us health. It centers us. We know who we are, what we need to do in the morning, what we need to do with our children, in our marriages. We know what we need to do in our communities. There's no dichotomy. God is one. Hashem Echad. And our response is Baruch Shem. Kvod Malchuto, let us, blessed be the glory of his kingdom forever and ever. We commit the six words on top, and we then say the other six words to say, I'll do my part, so that your kingdom can be revealed as you wanted it when you created the world. And that's why you created the world, because you wanted to dwell down here. And in the beginning part of Shema, where we say V'ahavta, that first paragraph, we say you shall love the Lord your God. And how do we show that love with all our heart, all our soul, all our might? The next pasuk, the next passage says, these words should be transmitted to your children. Let them be on your heart. Let them be close to you. It's not a theory. Let them be on your heart and teach them diligently to your children and bind them as a sign on your arm between your eyes, tefillin, and then mezuzah, write them on your doorposts. Practical mitzvahs. And in these practical mitzvahs is the connection. The most important thing we need to do is to do. We study to know what to do. What should I do? Light Shabbos candles. Check your mezuzahs. Make sure your tefillin are kosher and you put them on every weekday. Teach these words diligently to your children. And then, not only you shall love the Lord your God, there's a promise you will love the Lord your God. It's an incredible, incredible festival. It's our marriage. It's our commitment. It's our connection with Moshe Rabbeinu, David HaMelech, the Baal Shem Tov, Ruth, the beautiful Ruth, the mother of David. It's our connection to Hashem himself. And the number three is classical. Why? Because the Torah was given to the nation which is three. How are we three? Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim. In our nation, we have three divisions. We have the Kohen, the priests, the Levites, and the Israelites. Okay? And given in the month which is three, Sivan, because the Torah counts the months according to Nisan, the month of Pesach, the month we left Egypt, the month we became ready to become a nation. So Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, that's the third month. So to the nation that is three, in the month that is the third, he gave us the Torah, which is three. How? Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim. It has three sections. It has the five books of Moses, it has the prophets, and it has the holy writings. And who brought the Torah down? Moshe. And he was a third born to his parents. Amram and Yocheved had Miriam and Aaron and Moshe. And David HaMelech was born and passed away here. What does he have to do with three? You know the story? The story is that Adam was given, the first man, 3 hours in which to complete God's purpose in creation by not eating of the tree of knowledge between good and bad. And he failed. And after that, we've been making up, until now, making up the damage. There's certain things we're trying to make up for. One of them was the making of the golden calf. But before that, Adam was supposed to lead the world in song, lead the world like a huge chorus praising God. He was supposed to be the leader. And he was a great, great human being whom God created out of earth and into whom God blew a soul. And he was incredible. But he failed. And he brought death to the world. And he was so heartbroken that he spent the rest of his life repenting. But he looked for someone who could actually repair part of what he had damaged. And he looked through all the souls who would be born, and he saw the soul of King David, who was only destined to live 3 hours. But he had the soul, he shared parts of Adam, because Adam gave him 70 years. And his 70 years were dedicated to become the sweet singer of Israel, dedicated to lead all of creation in songs of praise of Hashem. So King David, who was only supposed to live 3 hours, it's his special day as well. And there's another three, that Israel, the Torah, and Hashem himself are considered one thing, unified. How? Well, when Israel lives according to Torah, they bring God's purpose down in a living way into this world. But here we are, the nation that is three, in the month that is the third, going to re-receive personally the Torah, which is three, which was brought down by Moshe, who is a third child. And it's a special day for King David, who was only meant to live 3 hours. The Torah, which is three, in the month which is three, the nation which is three, through Moshe who is three, King David who is three, what are we doing about all of this privilege? Unity. Incredible unity as a nation in this month with our Torah. And let's remember that the Torah is the blueprint for the world. Anything you want to know about life, you will get it in the Torah. beyond what you can imagine. We have incredible stories of people who couldn't figure it out, but that's okay. The Torah scholars said, that's easy. I'll tell you exactly what's going on. So let's share a few special stories here. What about education? We'll share a story that we once shared. In 1941, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, the sixth Rebbe, who was the father-in-law of our Rebbe, started a Jewish program. Well, there was a program, and he instituted it for Jewish children, kids who went to the New York City public schools. And on the books, it was by law that a religion, if the parents agreed, could take the children for an hour a week of religious study. It was called religious instruction. And the Rebbe arranged, previous Rebbe, a short while after he came to America, that Jewish children who were studying in public schools could have teachers who would come and take them to a nearby shul. And it was Wednesday afternoons. And the volunteers, the yeshiva students, would interrupt their studies for several hours, and they would travel to New York City's public schools all over, and they would bring the Kinderlach to a local shul and teach them as much as they could, and then take them back to the schools for dismissal. I think it was from 2 to 3. I had the privilege of doing it. And there's incredible stories up until this day with the children with whom I connected. And here goes the story. There was one Lomdische guy, a really studious young man, and he had a good head, and he wrote to the Rebbe. He said, could I be excused from participating in this program? Because he felt it was wasting his time. First he wrote he didn't think he was actually achieving very much, because every week, what did he do? He'd said a few brachas, a few prayers with the children, told them a little bit of a story. He didn't believe that those sessions had any lasting effect, you know, because they brought treats for the children, so the kids said the brachas. And secondly, he said it took him like a lot of time, and it took a big chunk of time, maybe 3 or 4 hours, to travel to the school that was assigned to him, pick up the children, teach them, drop them off, and then come all the way back to the yeshiva. And he said to the Rebbe he thought his time could be better spent furthering his own education. And this is what the Rebbe wrote to him, our Rebbe. The Rebbe said, I want you to know that on Wednesday afternoons, all the souls in Gan Eden, in heaven, including Moshe Rabbeinu himself, Moses, envy you for the unique opportunity you have each week to say Shema Yisrael and recite a blessing with a Jewish child. Their souls no longer have that opportunity, the opportunity to interact with a Jewish child and bring him closer to his Father in heaven. Do you know what they would give for the privilege that you have? It's very important that we shift our perspective onto others. And at this time, to shift our perspective seriously onto Jewish children, our own children, and any other child we can inspire. It's an incredible thing. And let's do one more story. The Rebbe met with a group of students, as he did in the 50s and the 60s and onwards. And he said to the students, I've asked you a lot of questions. Would any of you like to ask me a question? And one fellow spoke up and he said, as a matter of fact, I would. I've heard all kinds of stories about you. They say you know better than the doctors whether to perform a surgery, better than the lawyers whether to proceed with a case. How can that be? How do you know more about medicine than the doctors, or more about law than the lawyers? And this is what applies to us now. The Rebbe smiled and he said, when a house is being built, the architect draws up a blueprint, gives it to the contractor, who then directs the plumber regarding his trade, the electrician regarding his trade, and so on. You see, it's not the contractor who can do the work better than the others. It's just that he simply knows how to read the blueprint, so he's able to give the instructions. The same is true of our world, said the Rebbe. And then he quoted the Medrash. Hashem, God, the Lord, Master Architect, used the Torah as the blueprint for creation. Let's read that again. In the Medrash it says that Hashem, the Master Architect, used the Torah as the blueprint for creation. And then the Rebbe said, the more in touch we are with the Torah, the more sensitive we become to the inner workings of creation. Like, we could say, if you want to know how it works, study the manual. And so it will be that on Friday morning, we will be given the manual. And may Hashem bless us to treasure it, to study it, to live with it, to be guided by it, to be inspired by it, and to be able to do that for our children and those around us as well. And very soon, may we have the ultimate marriage, the ultimate revelation with the coming of Mashiach. Gut Yontif, and as the Rebbe would say, Kabbalas HaTorah B'Simcha U'B'Pnimius, may we merit to receive the Torah with joy and in an inward manner. Gut Yontif.